What the heck is happening? Hallo und herzlich willkommen im Podcast von Trending Topics. Israel hat ungefähr so viele Einwohner wie Österreich, ist so groß wie Niederösterreich und hat es trotzdem geschafft, dass es etwa 90 Unicorns im Land gibt. Noch ein Vergleich, 2022 wurden in österreichische Startups und Scale-ups etwa 1 Milliarde Euro investiert. In Israel waren es 15,5 Milliarden Dollar im letzten Jahr. Was machen die Israelis bloß anders als wir? Das wollen wir heute einen echten Experten und Buchautor zu dem Thema fragen. Nach der Werbepause geht's los. Die besten Startups, die schlauesten Gründerinnen und die wichtigsten VCs. 2023 tourt die Glaub an dich Challenge der Erste Bank und Sparkassen in Kooperation mit Trending Topics und dem Gründerservice der WKO wieder auf der Suche nach den besten Jungfirmen des Landes durch Österreichs. Beim größten Startup-Wettbewerb winken nicht nur der Titel Startup des Jahres, sondern auch spannende Keynotes und Investments in die Gründerinnen durch die Top-VCs Österreichs. Alle Infos unter www.glaubandich-challenge.at. Okay, and now I want to switch to English and I want to welcome Avi Yorish, author of the books Innovate and Next in the podcast. Welcome, Avi.
Such a pleasure to be on your show, Jacob. Thanks for taking the time.
So you have written many books. You first started with like more hardcore topics like terror financing, Iran's dirty banking system, and then you turned to topics like startups and innovation. Why?
I felt like I needed to turn to be a prophet of light as opposed to the prophet of doom and gloom. I spent many years looking at and exploring the motivations behind radical Islam, terrorism finance, state sponsors of terror. And that was fascinating. It was truly an interesting intellectual journey that took me to many countries in the Muslim world. As I mentioned to you in our conversation last night, I had the great privilege to live in Egypt for a few years and travel around the Muslim world. I'm originally from Israel and have always been fascinated from a very young age what was life just beyond the borders of the state of Israel. And from a very young age, I'll tell you an interesting story, Jacob, that I didn't share with you when we met last night. My mother jokes that what got me really interested in the Arab world was three things. The first is I come from Jerusalem, and the only museum that is open on Shabbat, on the Sabbath in Israel, in Jerusalem specifically, is the Islamic Art Museum. So at a very young age, we would spend time in the Islamic Art Museum, which really started to pique my interest. And in the 70s in Israel, there was only one television station state-sponsored. And if you were lucky to live in Jerusalem, you also had access to Jordanian television. So every Friday afternoon, there would be Egyptian films that almost every Israeli would watch from the hours of, 2 to 5. And so we would all watch these Egyptian movies. And seeing life in Egypt through the TV was a fascinating experience. And then at night, at 11 o'clock, TV in Israel would be done. So we would all turn to Jordanian television. And at midnight, you would see images from Saudi Arabia. You would see images of Muslims making Hajj, making pilgrimage to Mecca. And you'd see readings of the Quran. And that blew my mind. Followed up with, in Israel, it's a small country. You drive for 5-10 minutes, and all of a sudden you hit a border. And I always wanted to know what was just beyond the borders of the state of Israel. And so all that combined led to a very keen interest in, as you so eloquently put it, hardcore topics. And that really got me rolling professionally.
Mm. And so now you're focusing on startups, innovation. Israel is most famously, it's the startup nation. What can you tell us about this?
So I can tell you my journey into the startup world was not expected. It really began in the summer of 2014. Up until then, I'd really, as we mentioned, focused on hardcore subjects. And that particular summer, I brought my children to, we experienced the war of 2014. And I'll never forget, it was the beginning of July. And I brought my toddler, he was less than 2 years old. I brought him down to the bomb shelter. After the sirens begin to wail, and heralding the beginning of war, we huddled with our neighbors in a building in Jerusalem. And we waited for about 10 minutes, and our building violently shook. And we all intuitively knew that it was safe to come up. Up until that moment in time, missiles would, following the laws of physics, would go up, and then they would go down. something extraordinary happened in the summer of 2014. A missile went up and another met it in midair. The creation of what's now known as the Iron Dome came into existence just a few years before that, but it really was perfected in the summer of 2014. Israel had created the system that would blast missiles out of the sky. Up until that moment in time, that really, we only got to see that sort of thing in the movies. That really felt like Star Wars. This was Star Wars coming to life. And this innovation has a 95% accuracy rate. And it essentially allowed Israelis of all stripes and all kinds to go about their lives half normally. They knew that their lives would be safe, even though projectiles and missiles were shot from Gaza. I should also point out, the wonderful thing about this particular innovation is that it's a defensive weapon. And most people don't think about that in that way. But if you think about the Iron Dome, the beauty is that it protects lives on both sides of the border. Obviously, it protects lives on the Israeli side because a missile, when it goes up, isn't necessarily coming down and hitting population centers. But I want you to open your mind. And I want you to imagine that a missile goes up and then a missile goes down. Israel's response would be overwhelming because it needs to protect its citizens and would send its troops into Gaza and other places that are shooting projectiles. And so by having a defensive weapon that essentially prevents lives from being lost on the Israeli side of the border, it effectively saves lives on the other side of the border as well, because it gives Israeli policymakers the time to really calculate very carefully what an appropriate response might be. And so that particular summer, it began with Iron Dome. And I thought, what is this innovation? This is really mind expanding. And almost by happenstance, my mind began to be open to other innovations. As I mentioned to you last night, my gardener started talking to me about drip irrigation. I know I've seen this innovation before, but it never really captured my imagination until he said to me, you know, Avi, this innovation, drip irrigation, which is a plastic tube which emits a micro amount of water, which uses a third of the water but doubles the yield, said to me, you know, Avi, it's used by over 1 billion farmers around the world. I said, what? 1 billion farmers are using this innovation? Wow. It saves a precious resource that we don't have an infinite amount of. My controller, my CFO, her husband was diagnosed with Parkinson's, and he had these electrodes put into his brain. And by using sound therapy, was allowed to return to living a semi-normal life. And I discovered that that innovation also came from Israel. And I started going through and discovering that there were tons, hundreds, thousands of innovations that came from Israel that are really focused on curing the sick, feeding the hungry, helping the needy, and making the world a far better place. And many of those innovations are going far beyond the borders of Israel. And as your listeners are listening today to this podcast, I hope they'll take a gander. They'll take a look at the book that I wrote, Thou Shalt Innovate, How Israeli Ingenuity Repairs the World, which came out about 5 years ago and is now available in nearly 40 languages, including, of course, German. And my most recent book called Next, A Brief History of the Future, where I look at the innovations that are solving the grand global challenges that we're facing on planet Earth today. And I think that, or rather, what I hope that your listeners will discover is that we have these amazing innovations that are coming from Israel and other parts of the world that are truly helping solve some of the biggest challenges facing humanity. And it's why I'm so excited about all that's coming before us.
Let's talk a little bit later about what's next. First, one question. So you mentioned an important thing, like the starting point for your journey into the tech innovation was Iron Dome. And as I understand, the Israel Defense Forces are a major factor for the innovation system in Israel. Can you give us insight how that works? Why is the military so important for startups?
It certainly seems counterintuitive that the military could help produce so many startups. But in Israel, the ecosystem is really, it's part and parcel of the military. So the first, I want you to keep in mind that Israel is a very small country, both geographically and demographically speaking. There are about 9 million inhabitants of the state of Israel, just like Austria, but the landmass is much smaller. It's a very, very tight-knit small society. Everyone almost knows everybody else. It's a very small pond. And the military has access to the education system. And so someone going through high school, they identify the best and the brightest, and they bring them into these very specialized units, both on the intelligence side and also on the combat side. And they let them play with the big boy, big girl toys for their years in the military. And, you know, Malcolm Gladwell, who's a wonderful author from the United States, he often talks about the 10,000-hour rule. He essentially says that humans can perfect anything if they're given the opportunity to spend 10,000 hours doing it. You become a concert pianist, as an example, or a professional golfer, or whatever it is that you're interested in. Any human, as long as they surpass the basic threshold of intelligence, there's nothing they can't accomplish. I personally find that to be an extraordinarily inspiring concept, that there's really, as long as I'm willing to put in the hard work, there's nothing that we can't achieve. And so in Israel, you take that concept and they give these extraordinary young adults their 10,000 hours at a very young age with the big boy, big girl toys. And then as soon as they leave the military, they're in a position to really start these amazing companies in all realms. Now, there's a lot of wonderful cyber companies that are coming as a result of the military experience. And that seems pretty intuitive from a cyber defense perspective. But what's more extraordinary is that there's a lot of other companies being spun out. I'll give you just two examples if you'll allow me. The first is the emergency bandage, which is standard issue in NATO, the United States military, and many, many other places around the world. The bandage hasn't really been innovated since the 1920s. It's a very standard, you have a gauze pad, you have a little bit of a cloth, you wrap it around, and that's basically the bandage. In Israel, for the last many years, it's very interesting in the battlefield, what they would do is they would take that gauze, they would take the cloth, they would put a dirty rock on the gauze portion. They would take a stick and put it under the rock. They'd wrap the cloth around it, and then you would turn many, many, many times until you constrained the blood flow and stopped massive bleeding from happening. And you had an EMT, an emergency medical technician, look at that and say, that's really interesting. It's terribly unhygienic. It's very dirty. You're putting a dirty rock on a clean wound. I mean, that really makes no sense. So he created what's known as the emergency bandage, which is now standard issue in all these militaries around the world, and has literally saved a tremendous number of lives in places like Iraq, Afghanistan. For example, U.S. Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, who was shot in the head, was saved as a result of the emergency bandage. And you look at this and you say, wow, here's a military that is spinning off innovations that are also saving lives. I'll give you another example. Is the concept of PillCam. PillCam is a wonderful innovation that is now used in the medical community. It is a capsule the size of a pill. Embedded in it is a camera that you swallow in your mouth and it exits your rear end. And in the meantime, takes many, many pictures of your inside. Up until about 15 years ago, the only time that we as humans got to see the small intestine was in a cadaver, was in a dead body. You know, for medical science, you'd open up the body, you saw the small intestine. I don't know if you've had, Jacob, how old are you?
41.
41. So now, at least standard issue in the medical community, you have to have a proctological exam starting at 45 in order to ensure that you do not have cancer, polyps, and all kinds of things. Anyone who's had this sort of exam knows that the PillCam is a wonderful innovation because it's not fun. Here you swallow a pill. It goes through your insides, and it takes hundreds, if not thousands, of pictures, and a doctor is able to look very carefully and see, do you have polyps? Do you have cancer? What's really going on the inside? The gentleman who created it came from the military establishment, and the way he came up with this, he worked in missiles, and a missile would go up, and often in these smart missiles or smart bombs, there is a camera embedded at the very nose of the missile or bomb, taking lots of pictures and giving data back to the headquarters. And he thought to himself, wouldn't it be interesting to have that go through the human body and for us to determine what's going on the inside? That company not only is doing amazing and is saving lives and making the world a better place, it also exited for a tremendous multiple about 10 years ago. And this is where I really want your entrepreneurs to be listening, because you can also do very well by doing very good, okay? Or doing good by doing well, or doing well by doing good. The idea is to have a tremendous number of clients. And the best way of doing that is to solve a challenge that has a tremendous number of users that need to fix that problem. So I challenge your listeners to really think about these grand global challenges that we're facing: climate, water security, food security, artificial intelligence, space, AI, because the wind will be at their backs by solving these problems and having tons of potential users. Now, I would challenge you, Jacob, to really think about Israel in that context. Classically speaking, the United Nations has defined, depends on how you look at it, somewhere between 13 and 18 grand global challenges. Okay, let's just say a dozen for argument's sake. And I would challenge you to look at these grand global challenges, and I would challenge you to look at Israel. And I think you will find an Israeli of every stripe and every variety looking to solve one of these grand global challenges. And that I find to be very inspiring, how a small country the size of the state of New Jersey is playing an outsized role in solving these grand global challenges and making the world a better place.
Mm, absolutely. I've visited Israel and Tel Aviv four times now. And also what struck me is that there's kind of like I would say it's like the 80% culture. So I think Mark Zuckerberg would say done is better than perfect. Do you also see this? It's like part of the startup mentality. You don't have to be perfect, but you have to like move fast.
Yeah, perfect is the enemy of good. Here's what I will say. Israel is the startup nation. It has not typically been known as the scale-up nation. Okay, so there's a blessing and a curse in everything. Okay, I don't want you to think that I'm picturing Israel as a Garden of Eden. It has its problems like every other country in the world. And in this particular regard, perfect is the enemy of the very, very good. And so you have here some of the secrets. I think what you're really getting at is, what are the secrets of Israel's startup nation success? Because the secrets of the startup nation success are slightly different than a scale-up success. And Israel still has a ways to go in terms of getting up to the scale-up nation. But as you pointed out in your brief introduction, there's been a tremendous number of unicorns that have come into existence in Israel in the last 5 to 7 years. That really was unimaginable 20 years ago. The country has gone through a revolution in the last 20 years. And some of the secrets of Israel's success lie in the following. The first is this idea of failure. No human likes to fail, but we intuitively understand that in order to succeed, we must fail. Jacob, do you have children?
Not yet.
Not yet. We got to get you on that train, okay? But essentially, we all know that little babies, when they start to walk, they fall many, many times before they master the cycle of walking and then running. The light bulb, Thomas Edison, took over 1,000 filaments in order to succeed in creating the electric light bulb. The same thing is true in innovation. And in Israel, failure is celebrated rather than looked down upon in all aspects of society, in the military, at the university level, in startup scene. We intuitively understand that in order to succeed, you have to fail. Secondly, Israel is an extraordinarily diverse place. It has Muslims of every stripe and every variety, Christians of every stripe and every variety, and you have Jews from 100 countries around the world. And when you have a tremendous amount of diversity, a diversity of both humans, a diversity of experience, a diversity of thought, amazing things happen, especially in the innovation ecosystem. Traditionally speaking, Israel has been surrounded by enemies, and it has forced the country to think globally and act locally. And that has both been a blessing and obviously a curse. Israel has been a nation at war for 75 years. This is hopefully, we are seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. in the last few years alone, four countries have come into the Abraham Accords, bringing the total of six. We have Egypt and Jordan that have signed peace accords, Egypt in 1979, Jordan in 1994. And then you have obviously the last few to come into existence is Bahrain, the United Arab Emirates, Sudan, and Morocco. So you have this idea of thinking globally, acting locally. Then you have, of course, secular institutions like the military and all but one of its university. And then I would say, and I'll speak about this in a cultural sense, is the prophetic tradition. The religious tradition has been essentially encouraging members of the Jewish faith to cure the sick, feed the hungry, help the needy, bring more light into the world. And those ideas and those concepts are repeated on a daily basis. And they've had a deep, those concepts had a deep influence on the founding fathers and mothers of the state of Israel. And I would offer you that that informs and shapes the society today. The idea of what we call tikkun olam, which is roughly translated into repairing the world. The concept of repairing the world is baked into the Israeli innovation ecosystem. And it's why I would say to you, I would offer you that Israel is among the best, if not the best, at innovations that are curing the sick, feeding the hungry, helping the needy. Israel is not the most innovative place on the planet. The Bloomberg Index, every year this changes slightly. Sometimes it's number four, sometimes it's number five. Where Israel really does shine is these innovations that are making the world a better place.
Mm. I also would like to add one factor. Of course, there are a lot of venture capitalists from United States, Europe, that pump a lot of money into the ecosystem. How did Israel achieve this?
So it's a very interesting question. So first of all, it liberalized its, as you know, Israel began as a socialist country in the 40s, and it took many, many years for Israel to move off of its socialist beginnings. And liberalization happened in the 80s and 90s. And there was a brilliant series of legislative measures that took Israel from a socialist economy to a more capitalist economy. One of the big programs that really supercharged the innovation ecosystem was a program generally known as the 80-20-50-50 program. And the 80-20-50-50 program, if you have a wonderful idea, you will go to one of several hubs in Israel that are sponsored by the Ministry of Innovation. And you go to a panel of your peers and in a Shark Tank sort of experience, you pitch them your idea. And if your peers find merit in it, they will either fund 50% of the startup capital or 80% of the startup capital. And then you, as if you're chosen, you get a little bit of legal advice and you get a little bit of HR and you get a shared office space and you get a community of interest, etc. And if the company ultimately succeeds, you pay back the money that you received in, I don't remember if it's a low interest or no interest loan. It's really, it's a very favorable terms. The government is not interested in taking a piece of the company, so there's no equity given. And if you fail, you get it forgiven in the form of a grant. And what that really, the beauty of that is what it really does is it encourages failure. And encourages, it doesn't penalize you by failing. It actually encourages you to fail much faster. And it basically telegraphs to your population, we want you to succeed, but we recognize that failure is an important part of the ecosystem. And once you couple that and the liberalized capitalist system that Israel has become slash becoming, lots of venture capitalists discover the wonder of Israel. And when you marry that with a very smart population, the human capital, sky's the limit.
All right, Avi, thanks a lot. So we have a few minutes left. Last question. Your newest book is called Next. So what's next for Israel? Which technologies are you looking at?
Well, let's zoom. I want to zoom out because I want to talk about what's next for all of humanity. And then we'll get into what's next for Israel. So for your listeners, I want you to imagine 2030, which is only 7 years from today. 2030, most scientists predict some magic things will happen. So first of all, some cancers will be solved. Neurological diseases like Tourette's, essential tremor, Alzheimer's, we will find cures for those neurological diseases. You'll have much more alternative energy on the street. We'll proliferate the planet. We will have mastered autonomous vehicle driving. We will have many more electric vehicles. we will have a human on the moon full time and be making our first steps to Mars. And in 2030, a computer will process faster than a human brain for the first time in human history. Now, what does that really mean? It really means that for the first time, we will have thoughts that we never had before because we were constrained by the speed of the human brain. And what that also means is that we will likely find solutions to the biggest challenges facing humanity. Now, if I'm a listener of this show, what I really want to know is, how does that affect me? What Israel and many other countries that are innovating really represent are resilience, anti-fragile societies. Israel is one of the most resilient societies on the planet. And as we face these grand global challenges, people here in Austria and throughout Europe can look to countries like Israel that are resilient and import the best and the brightest innovations, because in the years ahead, we have these massive challenges that we can and will solve. By 2030, we'll experience thousands of years of human change. By the end of the century, by 2100, many scientists are predicting 20,000 years of human change. Now, we've only had 4,000 years of recorded history. And so the idea that we're going to experience in the next 80 years or so, 20,000 years, is a mind-bending concept. We can't even really understand what that means. But I'll boil it down to this. Peter Thiel talks about this concept of zero to one, bringing something from oblivion, from nothing, into something. We're going to have many, many zero to ones in the next few years, and we're going to have many one to infinities. We're going to take the innovations that have already birthed into existence in the realms of AI, in the realms of quantum computing, the realms of space, and we're going to basically improve those infinitely. There's a few other statistics that I want to at least bring into your collective consciousness. The first is, we're experiencing probably the best moment of human history that we have ever lived in before. Extreme poverty is at the lowest it has ever been. Child mortality is the lowest it has ever been. Literacy rates are the highest they've ever been. Access to clean water and electricity and shelter are the highest they've ever been. We're living truly in a golden era. I don't mean to downplay any of the problems that we're having, because we have a tremendous number of problems. But at the same time, we're also experiencing a golden era where we are really in an era of abundance. And that, frankly, I find inspiring. I love the idea of looking at countries like Israel that are innovating solutions to our greatest problems. And here in places like Austria and other parts of Europe, as we look at the challenges that we're facing, I encourage you to look at places like Israel and others that are really solving our greatest challenges. I'll end with this one thought, this idea of darkness and light. And I love this idea. In Jewish thought, there's an idea that says, a little bit of light dispels a lot of darkness. Now, I don't know how many of your listeners are going to create the next Facebook or LinkedIn or Checkpoint, a big company. But I do know that every one of us has the ability to do wonderful things for the people around us. Look at someone in the eye and smile. Call your mother. Open the door. Visit the sick. Help someone cross the street. There are things that we can do to truly dispel a lot of darkness by doing a little bit of light.
Avi, great words. Thanks a lot for the interview.
Thanks, Jacob.
So, das war die heutige Folge des Trending Topics Podcast. Wenn es euch gefallen hat, lasst uns doch 4-5 Sterne als Bewertung da und folgt dem Podcast auf Spotify, Apple Music und Co. Für Anregungen, Kritik, Feedback oder Wünsche zu zukünftigen Gästen schickt uns jederzeit gerne eine Mail an feedback@trendingtopics.at. Weitere News zu allen Inhalten gibt es natürlich tagesaktuell auf trendingtopics.eu. Danke an dieser Stelle an Geocast für die tolle Post-Production. Euch danke fürs Zuhören. Bis bald.